We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
No question. Sports, let's talk about the integral parts of offensive line. People just think, okay, those guys line up and block, and let them know how important it is for the San Francisco offensive line to jail the calls that has to be made. Scoop different run blocking schemes, the different things that goes on up front in the trenches. That's very critical for an offense to show sustainability.
Well, you know, luckily for the Niners, they basically returned almost everybody, and Weston will come back healthy. McGlinchey in his second year, obviously Joe Staley, Lincoln Tomlinson. I played with him in Detroit, and he has all the talent. I think he finally sort of put it together last year in San Francisco. So just having everyone back is huge. Obviously, having Jimmy G back to help with identification and whatnot, but look, people think it's so simple. Look, offensive linemen are best when they know what everyone else is doing. So if I was the right guard, which I spent most of my career, I knew what I was doing. I knew what the right tackle was doing. I knew what the left guard was doing. And when everyone knows what they're doing, it makes adjustments very easy. So you have a situation where, you know, you're on the road and it's hard to hear what's happening, but you know the play. You know that you're supposed to go here, and Weston makes a late check call, and you don't have to scream out, hey, you have him, you have him, you have him. You just go, okay, we're good, we're good, we're good. All right, let's go and snap the ball. So just being together, learning together. I do feel, though, the lack of practice time does hurt offensive linemen. And really, it's a very small thing, but the iPad. So everyone basically has an iPad now with the playbook and their film on it. And when I was in the NFL, we didn't get those, especially early in my career. And we used to watch film as a unit. As an offensive line, we get together in the morning after practice and watch film together and learn the game with each other. And I feel like that's kind of gone in the NFL right now. Guys are making it up by hanging out in other ways, but that film preparation is so important for offensive linemen. It's a little bit lost art in the NFL now.
Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman, joining Jolo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. We've had a variety of conversations with national NFL writers, former players over the last week regarding expectations for the 49ers this year. We have a set of expectations. The expectations we're getting seem to be a little bit different. What are you thinking for them this year? Given the state of the NFC, given the state of the NFC West and the team, where do you expect them to finish?
Well, if Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy, they've won football games. I mean, that's, you know, it's pretty simple. Last year, he was a little up and down to start, even though he obviously did get hurt against the Chiefs. But, you know, the NFC West, let's say, I think Seattle is better than people think. You know, their biggest total is set at 8.5, or 8, I believe. That's wildly low. They've won 9 games every year. Wilson has been there. The Rams are interesting. You know, I don't know if they have a Super Bowl hangover like we've seen almost every team in the NFC have a Super Bowl hangover. Just kind of the disappointment of not showing up in the biggest game of the year. But Cooper Kupp coming back is so huge for that offense. I don't think they lose very much with Ndamukong Suh moving on. You know, he should have had an 18 sack year last year. I mean, everyone was doubling Aaron Donald. And you look at the Cardinals, I do not for 1 second buy Cliff Kingsbury and what he's going to do in Arizona. I think they're a bad football team this year. I think the Niners are probably third in the division, maybe second. I think the Rams and the Seahawks, again, kind of battle for the top of it.
It's a team coming off an 0-8 road record last season, Jeff. How difficult is it for a team that hasn't won on the road to learn that skill?
Well, I think for any team, it's tough to learn how to finish games. There's a lot of teams that are very good for 55 minutes. A lot of teams that are good for 58 minutes. Having your quarterback healthy for the season would definitely help that, because a lot of those games do come down to a final possession where you do need to have a franchise quarterback, or at least a starting quarterback, to be able to help with that. So I think they'll just grow into that. I'm not terribly concerned about that, because they didn't have Jimmy G last year. If you had told me they were 0-8 on the road and had Jimmy G, then you have to kind of explore what's happening with Shanahan behind the scenes, because he was not, you know, bad at that with the Falcons, obviously not the head coach, but in charge of the offense. So I'm not terribly worried because they have Jimmy G coming back.
Yeah, let's assess the coaching of the San Francisco 49ers. We talked about the talent They seem like they have some talent now, offensive, defensive. They went out in the draft and brought in capable guys. How big is coaching for this team, situational coaching, and what do you think about Shanahan and also Sully?
Well, Shanahan has done a good job as an OC. My brother played for him in Cleveland. He really liked him. Being a head coach is just different, though, and I'm not sure it's affected him very much. Look, they were competitive in games last year with a second- and third-string quarterback. That is very impressive because we've seen a lot of backups in the NFL play, and their teams completely fall apart. So there obviously is good coaching on the offensive side of the ball. They're continuing to amass talent on defense. It does take time when you have a depleted roster, which you got after Chip Kelly, for Lynch to continue to build that up. This is year three now, right, I believe, in their system. And this is the year it has to come together. This is the third year for a player is the biggest year in their career typically, especially if you're a lower draft pick. You're in practice squad or lower end of the roster year one, year two. You kind of work your way into getting more reps, starting a little bit. Year three is the year. I feel like year three now is the year to really show Shanahan, Lynch, and obviously you have to hope Jimmy G's healthy and stays healthy all year to really show what you can do. Yeah, you should be more competitive now and cut down on mistakes than you have been previously.
8-year NFL veteran offensive lineman. You can check him out now. Terrific NFL analyst at SB Nation, Sirius XM Radio, ESPN Radio. He's all over the place. Jeff Schwartz with us here on 95.7 The Game. Always a pleasure, Jeff. Thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Real quick, are the Giants just going to keep winning the rest of the year? It'd be very nice to make the playoffs. I'd love for that to happen. Just rooted for them.
I don't see them losing again. I mean, I think we've handicapped it at a 50-50. They're just going to run the table.
The problem is, are they going to be in the hunt where they don't trade Bumgarner? What do you hear? Are they going to trade him or not? I need to know.
This is the great debate that we've had over the last few weeks since this run started. I personally am of the belief that, yes, they should continue to move the big-time assets. This is a nice run. It's a fun run. It's an exciting run. But if you don't move the assets and Bumgarner and Will Smith get to free agency and leave and you get nothing for them and you don't end up making a deep run this year, what was the point? Like, it's a nice run, but if you miss the wild card spot by a game and you get nothing for Bumgarner and nothing for Will Smith, that feels like a pretty big fail to me.
I'm with you. Just lastly, please don't trade anyone to the Dodgers. Come on. Like, let's not do that. Let's not help them out. Go Giants, and that's it.
Excellent. Thanks, Jeff. Very strong. We appreciate your time.
All right. Take care, guys.
Talk about the versatility. Man.
Incredible. I love it.
Now that we're done with this stupid NFL interview, let's talk some baseball.
Seriously, it is July, guys. What are you doing? Call me about Kevin Pillar next week. We'll break it down.
Back to the Bosa situation for just a moment, because I know we've been talking about this and recalibrating every day. I do believe, personally, this is my viewpoint, that he will be signed and ready to go at the start of camp. Now, if they're going to take it easy on the hamstring, that would be the only reason I see him not as a part of the first practice. But from a contract standpoint, I say it gets done. It has to get done. You don't have the leeway from the fan base to drag this thing out. This is a bad look, especially in this day and age, when these rookie contracts extend in the training camp. And rather than talking about positional battles and the schedule and some of the key games you're looking forward to, you're talking about whether or not you're going to get a guy signed. This is not 10 years ago under the previous CBA when you could negotiate for anything. And you had $60 million guaranteed going to Sam Bradford or Matthew Stafford. These guys are slotted. So there's really only a couple key things that you can tweak here and there. You're the San Francisco 49ers. You don't nickel and dime. Leave that to some of the other organizations out there like Miami. You don't nickel and dime. You do not have the leeway to come into this season fighting more negative PR battles. You've had injuries. You've had bad hires. That's prior to this current regime. I like this current regime, but I'm saying bad hires, injuries, it's been a mess since the end of the Harbaugh era. Do not start this year off on the wrong foot with the, hey, look, we're confident, we're going to get it done with Bosa. It's just, you know, this is the business. No one's going to want to hear that. When camp opens, people want to talk about football. They don't want to talk about contracts. And come December, people don't want to talk about the draft. They want to talk about the playoffs. This is on you, Lynch. This is on you, Shanahan. This is on you, Garoppolo, and the rest of the roster. Get it done. It's not like it's going to cost you more money. It's really just a matter of some of these offsets and the timing of the payments. York's got the money. The Niners have the money. You are not a nickel and dime organization. Get it done. And if you're Bosa and his representation, be reasonable with the whole thing. Get what everyone in that slot has gotten before and move on. Because if this kid has a holdout And then he also has a hamstring injury. You're going to get him off on the wrong foot with the fan base. All right? People are excited about Nick Bosa right now. But that excitement will wane the longer he's not in camp. And then if he comes back and tweaks something, well, here we go. Another injury. Guy holds out. He's hurt. Guy comes into the OTAs. He gets hurt right away. That's not what you want to do. Put him in a position where he can win. Put yourselves in a position where you can win.
I'm with you almost 100%, Joe, but I stop short of the whole idea of caving because you don't want to set precedent in these negotiations. And you got Deebo Samuel unsigned as well, right? Their second-round pick, both represented by the same agency, if I'm not mistaken. So
CAA, yes.
As you start to get into these negotiations, you don't want to send a message to future draft picks that you're a team that's going to cave underneath these sort of demands. So you do have to toe the line to a certain point. And I know it's not the money that's the issue because it's all slotted, but certain protections for the team, you don't want to have the precedent set that you're not going to be able to hold those lines.
Well, if you look at CAA, their contracts, they're very well buttoned up.
And Tom Condon is the top dog over there.
Absolutely. I've talked to him several different times, and they're best for the player. They're going to make sure that the language is going to be beneficial for the players, as far as signing bonuses, not just that, with reporting bonuses before the fiscal year start again that February. If they want their guys getting that money, certain things that some teams don't want to compromise, injuries, all these different things. You look at it. You look around CAA. There's a lot of players they have that hadn't signed. This is not a 49er deal. This is a league deal. Hell, when I was playing Willie Rofe, some of those guys held out. It's just the way the league is. It's the late whoever the agent is, because those agents know that they're looking at when they go out to talk to that next young man that they want. And if they look at this rookie deal and say, look at the language, and all these agents, they can get it's public information.
Right.
So they get that, and they look and they say, oh, this guy did that. He did that. CAA is a big enough firm. They are not going to let their clients or other teams can upstage them. So this is a situation just how it goes, and the language is going to be huge.
And I wonder if there isn't, and maybe you, Joe, would have a better idea of this than anybody, but could there be lockout protection language in these contracts? Because we're looking at a possible labor stoppage, and if Nicky Bosa signs, what would it be, a four-year deal with a fifth-year option, you might be in a situation after the next 2 years where the league has a stoppage. Would CAA maybe be trying to put in some lockout protection in there?
All right, so that would be 2 full years into your contract when the next CBA is up. So you would be entering year 3, which means that's the first year in which you are allowed to start negotiating the next deal, right? Do you have to get, I don't know if you have to get full 3 years or if going into the 3rd year is when you're allowed to start negotiating the deal, but I would have to imagine the smarter age. Okay, so he's still a year away from that.
Right.
I would have to imagine the smarter agencies would be looking ahead to protecting their clients in those scenarios. If memory serves me correctly, the issue with his older brother was that he just wanted the payments up front. Like the signing bonus and the guaranteed portion, most teams would give you that as a lump sum, or they'd pay most of it out before the end of the year. The Chargers wanted to stagger it over the course of 6 to 12 months, and he just didn't want that. And that's what they were fighting over.
Right.
How much he was going to get. It was just when he was going to get the payments.
Yeah, what they do is they defer it. The team says, I'm going to defer this money. And the player's like, hell no, because I don't want you to defer my money, because that means you're going to be making interest off my money.
Right. Today right worth now. More than money tomorrow.
Exactly. They're saying, look, I'd rather be able to get my money first, for I can invest it in what I want to, instead of the team saying, oh, we're going to pay you this other $2 million here. But now that $2 million they have, they're keeping it in their banks. They're collecting interest off that. So it's how the compensation, deferring. So there's a lot of little stuff that goes on.
Gotcha.
Here's how the situation should play out if you're Jed York. You ever see the movie Half-Baked?
Yeah.
All right, you see
it? Yeah, bro.
So you know where Dave Chappelle plays, what, Thurgood Jenkins is his name? He goes to find Sir Smoke-A-Lot, and he gets called in, and Sir Smoke-A-Lot's by the pool hanging out, and they're sitting there, they're having a conversation. Sir Smoke-A-Lot also happens to be Dave Chappelle. And they're having this conversation, and he tells them, let me get a pound of your Swedish kebab. And that's what he asks him. And he goes, yes, someone told me to bring a lot today. And he throws him the pound, and this is going to be York in this situation. York is Sir Smoke-A-Lot. He looks at him, and he says something like, that's going to be $9,600, brah.
Yeah.
And Sir Smoke-A-Lot looks at him and goes, let me see what I got right here. And he just throws a stack of money at him like it's nothing, and he goes about his business. That's Jed York. Let me see what I got right here. And you flick him the money, and you move on with your business.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You don't want the PR hit of dragging this thing. And this is not a conversation you want to have if you're the Niners. Every conversation about the Niners has been everything but football since Harbaugh. Was it the right hire? Are you going to tank? Is there a problem with the injury concerns? What's the deal with Chip Kelly? Who are you going to hire next? What are you going to do at quarterback? Is this guy the real deal? Do you give him this much money? It just goes on and on. It's never, hey, you think they're going to win this weekend? Hey, you think they got a shot at the playoffs? It's been anything but. This is year three. The organization needs to look buttoned up. Just get it done. If there's something he wants, there's something you want, I'm sure you're haggling a bit. You realize the date in question. You get together and you figure it out. You just figure it out. You don't want these questions surrounding the team. The second they step foot on that field, when that first practice ends, I don't want to see microphones and Garoppolo and Shanahan and everyone else's face. What do you think about Nick Bosa not being here? That's not what you want. That's for Arizona, okay? That's for the teams that can't figure it out. You got to conduct yourself like a first-class organization. Do you ever hear about these holdouts in New England? Do you ever hear about contractual problems in New England? If it bubbles up, the guy's usually gone.
Jamie Collins was the guy, right, who talked about he wanted to get more money than he was getting, and I think 48 hours later he was on the move.
And guess where he went?
Cleveland, coach.
Exactly.
He went to Cleveland.
Exactly.
And this is old-school Cleveland, not the new Cleveland. The new-look Cleveland where Baker Mayfield is simply everywhere on every outlet.
Same thing happened with Chandler Jones. They moved him to Arizona.
Chandler Jones is the other one.
You know who it didn't happen to? Dante Hightower. Do you know why? Because Hightower realized if you wanted to be there and you wanted to get paid, just go about your business and the Patriots will take care of you when it matters. Or they won't and you'll go make your money elsewhere. But there's no point rocking the boat in New England. They've set precedent, okay? When the quarterback, the greatest to ever do it, takes far below his market value, it is very difficult in that locker room for anybody else to complain about anything financially. Very difficult. Brady has made life extremely difficult for the rest of his teammates. So you either buy into the concept or you don't. Either way, you're going to have an opportunity to play football. It just comes down to where. The good teams in professional sports do not have a lot of nonsense surrounding them. You don't spend a lot of time talking about New England and garbage off the field. Every now and again, there's something. Like the Seth Wickersham story from two seasons ago about Alex, what was his name, Martinez, Guerrero.
Alex Guerrero.
Yeah, that whole thing. All right, so there was that story. And then you had the things with the cheating, Deflategate and Spygate and all that. But that's just what they're doing on the field and whether or not they're getting caught. Yeah.
Bob Kraft, right? And Florida field trips.
Yeah, that's just Bobby, you know.
It's
just a massage dip.
He's got a massage dipper.
Coach, we're talking about off-field distractions and controversies.
Yeah, is that really
controversies.
That's the English the might say.
Controversies. Plus, there was the divide between the Jimmy G Belichick camp and then the Kraft Brady. There was that division, so that's a thing as well.
But what does everyone always say? The Patriot way. Yeah, that is, you never hear it say the Raider way. You never hear it say the Niner way. You never hear people say the Browns way. It's a hashtag, the Patriot way.
You don't hear anyone going, hey, it's the Marlin way.
Right.
That's how we do things down here.
Exactly.
Yeah, we get it. You got a bunch of MVPs that you trade for peanuts.
Yeah.
Seriously. Stan was an MVP. Yelich was an MVP. Yeah. Ozuna, not an MVP, but a solid player.
Real Muto, good player.
Yeah.
Delt.
Yeah. He's up on that Philly team that Guru tried to reverse mush last. Yeah. Guru got burnt bad on that Dodger mush last night.
He's hurting today.
Just sometimes. He came in yesterday. It's one of the best stories I've ever heard. He goes, Joe, I had the 16 parlay last night.
Yes.
I was so close. Like, well, what happened? I hit the first five. Like, well, what happened in the sixth? I had the Astros. They were up 3-0. And then they left the guy in too long and he blew it.
And yesterday.
Well, this is what happens when you play 16 parlays. You might have one thing break the wrong way.
Yeah. I lost a pick six over the weekend, too. I lost three of the six races, but I was that close. My horse lost by a neck.
Leave Guru, we love you.
We love you, Guru.
We're just having fun.
At your expense.
Sure.
Man, I cannot believe we are 9 days from them reporting to camp. Like, where does the time go? Where did the summer go? We're already getting set for this. Schwartz comes on. He is also of the opinion that this team is going to be a legitimate playoff contender. Are you starting to recalibrate? I know you've been a little bit more bearish on the Niners, Dibs, than Lowe has been.
Yes.
Lowe's put him at eight minimum and then with some ceiling. You see it a little bit the other way. As you continue to hear from the Peter Kings, the Dante Whitners, does it have you recalibrating?
No, not really. I mean, we're still sitting here in mid-July, and as much as the summer is whizzing by, it's July 17th. The first game's not till September 8th. And before September 8th, we, of course, will do our big prediction show, every division, Super Bowl predictions, over-under for the Niners and the Raiders. That's all still to come. We have nearly 2 months until those decisions have to be made. So right now, I'm not ready to be a flip-flopper like the person in front of you. Lowe was referencing the person to your right earlier. I'll reference the person in front of you.
I've never flipped. I've always said this is eight. I said eight is the bare minimum. I've never wavered from that.
Well, you were
We've done such a good job not fighting each other this week.
We've done such a nice job.
That's patently false because earlier he was singling me out, and so now I'm just returning the favor.
It's fine, and I can handle that. You know, I look at the San Francisco 49ers, and for you, you're looking at September, and you say, oh, then I'll know something. That's hogwash. That's because you should be saying in less than 30 days. I think they play in August, so you're not going to take anything away from that. So you don't want to look at what you see in August and look at some things and to start looking at guys. You don't want to see Nicky Bosa, see what he does in August, so help determine what you think about September.
I am going to overreact to everything in August. I personally guarantee that.
I think that there's
I'm coming in selling panic every day.
Yeah.
Preseason panic.
Yeah. We're going to come off that first preseason game. It's either they're winning the Super Bowl or they're going 0-16. And then we're going to come up the second one, and I'll probably flip-flop there.
You want to see
It's too emotional.
It's not about score. You want to see what people are doing.
Sure.
You want to see individual play. You want to see if guys are getting outside shoulder free. You want to see if cornerbacks are lined up the right way. Those are things you can learn, Dibbers, and find out, and it can be determined and say determination and saying, man, this guy plays pretty good in preseason. You can kind of take that over to the next day if you can.
Yes, the Dibbers, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. I'd love to give you a chance to retort. It's nothing personal. It's just the structure with which the show has brought us to this inevitability. Now,
I took it that way.
We can go ahead and set the stage for the next segment. So would you filibuster him?
Yeah.
You took him to the buzzer?
Yeah, take him to the buzzer. I was looking
at the clock. You Barkley'd me is what you did.
Dibs will have a chance to retort afterwards. You're going to hear from Peter King. His thoughts regarding the 49ers, extraordinarily optimistic. Good news, but I don't know if the room agrees. We'll dissect some of that. But first, Stephen Langford, the great Stephen Langford, with what could be the greatest update of all time. Take it away, Stephen.
Actually, the greatest update of all time was yesterday, Joe, but we'll go with that today. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Ticket Crushers. Bay Area baseball is a-cooking right now, people. I'd pay attention if I were you, because the Giants have won 3 straight against the Rockies, making that 9 of their last 12. They close out the series today with rookie Sean Anderson on the hill throwing some cheddar. And on the other side of the Bay, the A's have won 5 straight and go for the 2-game sweep over Daniel Vogelbach in the division rival Mariners. NFL Insiders Week continues here at 95.7 The Game as Peter King is now a part of the 95.7 The Game family. He joined Damon yesterday and talked about his number one question for the 49ers entering this season.
How many games can Bosa and Garoppolo play? If they both play 14, 15, 16 games, this team has got an excellent chance to be a playoff team.
And another NFL Insider for 95.7 The Game, former 49er Ian Williams will be in studio with Bonte, Steiny, and Guru at 12. Coming up, more shenanigans from Joe Lowe and Dibs. I'm Stephen Langford on the Bay Area's number one sports station. That's 95.7 The Game.
Coming up today on The Game, the MLB Network's Chris Rose breaks down the Giants' potential trade deadline moves with Joe Lowe and Dibs at 9. And our NFL Insider Week continues as former 49er Ian Williams joins Bonte, Steiny, and Guru live in studio starting at noon on the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7. The Game. Joe Lowe and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, let's get to work. Welcome to the Money Spot, one consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you, our football-stoked listening audience, because we love you and because we have got several items of importance to get to over this upcoming run. First and foremost, your guest lineup for the rest of the day, Chris Rose, host of Intentional Talk. You can also find him on the NFL Network. He's going to join us at 9:05. Cam Inman, 49er reporter from the Bay Area News Group at 9:30. Bet 162 to close the show around 9:50. We had another winner yesterday. Dibs has got British Open locks, or for those of you who want to get accurate with it, Open Championship locks coming up at around 9:50 as well. You got 5 of them, from what I understand.
Yeah, I made some wagers low when I was in Reno. Fired away on 5 different guys, mostly medium to long shots. So a couple of price picks for you here before 10 o'clock, because the Open starts tonight, 10:30 p.m. our time.
I can't wait.
I'll be locked in.
Looking forward to seeing what you got. You know, you're pretty good when it comes to some of these things. Not.
Wow.
1992.
Might have been 89.
Yeah, I'll refer you to such things as the Canelo Triple G draw that I called.
He did nail that one.
That was unbelievable.
He did nail that one.
I mean, I've been on a heater from time to time, and for you to disparage me like that felt a little bit personal.
What was the sobriety level when you fired these wagers, if I may ask?
I was probably in the point teens. I mean, we call them the teens.
You weren't legal, is what you're saying.
No. But, you know, not driving.
Certainly not. No, certainly not. We would never advocate.
I was uber safe, but I was in the teens.
All right, you were in the teens. Optimistic, though. Optimistic on that. Optimistic on Bet 162. And as we continue to talk to NFL insiders, both locally and nationally, we are getting the same opinion over and over again. And quite frankly, not only is it optimistic, it's surprising. I'm starting to wonder whether or not I'm being too cautious going into this season. I think I may have learned a lesson last year. We watched how Garoppolo and the Niners closed, and we thought, you know what? Forget it. These guys are finally ready to pop. This could be a playoff team. Rude awakening very early in the season. So I think I throttled back a bit this year. Based on that and some of the other things I've looked at, the NFC is going to be as daunting as ever. The NFC West is filled with teams that can play some football. Arizona should be better than last year, in my opinion, but it could be close. Point being, I think 8-8, right where Vegas put the win total, was where I was leaning. And now, as we continue to talk to NFL insiders from around the game, I'm feeling like I got to bump that number up. Take a listen to Peter King, newest member of the 95.7 The Game NFL football coverage team, on with Damon Bruce and Darren Smith yesterday.
If Jimmy Garoppolo slips on a banana peel in September, they're not making the playoffs. But I don't think that you look at Jimmy Garoppolo the same way that I don't think you look at Carson Wentz necessarily and say, well, you know, they're doomed to a life of being injury prone. Having said that, I think you got to prove, they have to prove that they can stay upright. But I believe, in my opinion, if Garoppolo plays 16 games this year, I'm picking the 49ers to go to the playoffs.
The playoffs. That's Peter King. Not a troll, not a guy who throws stuff up against the wall just for attention. He's not going to come on air and pander to anybody. He's always going to give you his honest opinion. And he truly believes that the Niners are a playoff team. I mean, do we need to recalibrate here? You had him what? You said about 8 wins with some upside. Are you starting to think even more optimistically about this club this year?
I think you have to. I think that we... us just looking at him, we said, oh, my God, I know people talk about Jimmy G and the injury. How's he going to bounce back? I just think he has more weapons around him than what people give him credit for. I think he has some good running backs. I think that this running back is above average to, you know, running back core, and it's by committee. I think you've got one of the better tight ends, of a very elite tight end, you know, that's playing. So you got a guy that can change the game in a heartbeat. You look at the offensive line, you talk about chemistry, guys coming back together. And hell, defense, they made so many upgrades. You didn't go get one, but you went and got two pass rushers that can put pressure on the quarterback. And you got a Richard Sherman that's coming back that's going to be pretty much 100%. This is 2 years removed from the Achilles injury. You got guys in the secondary that's shown you signs that they can play better, especially with the defensive front. So you look at this team and you see where they're at, especially the way that they're starting off. I know we're talking about, hey, the teams that they're playing. You look at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay only won 5 games last year. The Niners won 4. So you got to look at it and say, okay, these are two teams that struggled last year. Then look at their second game, Cincinnati. They won 6. 2 teams that have 2 new head coaches. You got to give the team with more stability the edge. I can't just dismiss that. And Daniel, I know you do. You say, hey, because they haven't shown me they can win on the road. They lost 8, in all due respect. I totally understand that. But you got to also look at saying, you got 2 new coaches that's taken over these two teams.
Sure.
With a lot of question marks as well.
Yeah.
So you got to look at this thing and say, I got to give those teams the edge for both of those games.
Well, maybe if it was home game. It's a road game, and if you look at the point spread, those are feeling like toss-up games at Tampa Bay and at Cincinnati. And I'll just offer a couple of counterpoints, and
please.
The points you made were great, although the offensive line, I'm still a little bit suspect of the caliber. I like what you said about the continuity, and that's very important. I'm a little concerned about the caliber. And I look at the defense, the pass rush, and you mentioned the 2 new pass rushers, and you're right. They should be able to get after the quarterback, but that doesn't necessarily do the job to help your secondary, which was among the worst secondaries we've seen.
Ferocious.
They generated 2 interceptions, Lowe. I believe that's the fewest in the modern era since expansion for defenses to just have two takeaways. So if they get more sacks, does that necessarily mean that they'll get more interceptions? And you look at the numbers, and the two things don't necessarily correlate. Pittsburgh tied for the most sacks last year with 52, but they only had 8 interceptions. Now, Chicago had 50 sacks and 27 interceptions because they had a better secondary. So for me, it's not a direct correlation between sacks and takeaways, which is what this defense so desperately needs. So those are just additional reasons why I'm more cautious about jumping in and saying they're going to win 9 or 10 or being a playoff team like Peter King says.
There are a handful of metrics that serve a significant value in predicting the future, right? Run differential, scoring differential. We talk about that in baseball all the time. You look at a team's scoring differential and say, for example, it's even. At the end of the baseball season, you have scored as many runs as you've given up. That should give you a 500 record. You should have just as many wins as you do losses. If you're 10 games over, you outperform the expectation. The record is not indicative of who you truly were. There could be a regression the next year, right? If you finish with the same amount of runs scored as given up, but you're 20 games under 500, that's a team you want to look to bounce back the following year. Several metrics are out there. Two key ones that apply in the NFL are as follows. Number one, and this is in no particular order, but the first one we're going to talk about is turnover differential. Turnover differential is huge when it comes to predicting a team rising or falling from one year to the next. Here's an example. Last year, the Cleveland Browns ranked dead last. This was actually two seasons ago. So going into last year, they ranked dead last in the NFL in turnover differential. Now, teams that rank dead last in the NFL in turnover differential over the last 10, 20 years, they come back in a big way the following season. It's very difficult, whether you're number 1 or 32 in turnover differential, to maintain those numbers. You tend to regress towards the mean, towards the middle. And as a result, you'll either lose some games and drop down if you're going from 1 to the middle, or you'll rise up if you're dead last coming up. The two teams last season, two seasons ago, Baltimore was number 1 in turnover differential. They struggled a bit from one year to the next. The Browns obviously ranked dead last. They improved. They went from 0 wins to what, 7 last year. It's not the only reason why, but it's one of those metrics you always want to look at. Teams that finish that badly, they'll improve by roughly 4 games per year, 4 wins per year. The Niners finished dead last in turnover differential last year. They were minus 25. The next closest was Tampa Bay at minus 18. Minus 25 for the Niners. They are going to be better, mark my words on that. I would make a significant bet that they are better on that just based on what history has shown us. And as a result, if they could get towards league average, if they could get towards an even number of turnover differential, give up as many as you take away, you're going to improve by 4 or 5 games right there. That's number one. Number two is your record in one-score games. How do you perform in one-score games? History has shown us that you should be right around 500. If you play 10 games that are determined by one score, you should be 5-5, right? Any team that's on one end of the spectrum, say 8-2 or say 1-9, you will see an improvement almost guaranteed, or a regression almost guaranteed the next year. Niners were 3-6 in one-score games last year. 3-6. Two of the most important metrics to predict improvement are in the Niners' favor, and not just slightly, in a significant fashion. Turnover differential and one-score games. Not only that, you went out and spent money on D4 to improve the pass rush. You drafted Nick Bosa to improve the pass rush. You brought in Tevin Coleman at running back, drafted Deebo Samuel and Jalen Hurd at wide receiver, and Jimmy Garoppolo is coming back healthy. There are a lot of indicators that point to this team taking a big step forward this year. The one thing I can't get over, if there's one thing that has me slightly bearish about them going to the playoffs, is the schedule. That's the crazy thing. I could see them 3-0 waiting for Cleveland. I can definitely see them 2-0 hosting Pittsburgh in the opener. But that final 6-game stretch, I cannot get over that. Final 6 games of the season, hosting Green Bay, at Baltimore, at New Orleans, hosting Atlanta, hosting the Rams, at Seattle. That's the one thing that has me from going over the top. I can see them at 8. I could possibly see myself looking at an over on the season win total at 8, but that final 6-game stretch is the one thing I can't get over.
And if they are 3-0 after the opening 3, it's a michelada for you, which is beer and tomato juice, as we discussed yesterday. We did mark the tape, and we locked it in, so that's something that we can at least look forward to.
I forgot about that.
If they're going to be a playoff team, as Peter King says that they could be if Jimmy G plays all 16, they're going to have to be 3-1 after the opening four, whether it's a loss to Pittsburgh or a loss to the Browns. However that works out, I think you need to be 3-1 after four because of what you talked about with the ruggedness of those last six games. They were 2-6 on one-score games in 2017, by the way, as we look at a possible regression. So 5-12 over the last two seasons. If they do reverse that trend, and if they reverse the trend on turnover differential, then I think you're looking at a 10-win, maybe even an 11-win team.
Cleveland's going to open with a home game against Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Then they'll be at New York to take on the Jets. Could be a 2-0 situation for them there. They will then host the Rams before traveling to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. I could see 3-1. I think 4-0 is probably a stretch there. 2-2 feels very reasonable. I could see it as high as 3-1 with the Niners coming off a bye in week four at what I think is most likely 2-1, possible 3-0, to take on each other Monday night. Like, who would have thought 3-4 years ago that Niners-Browns Monday Night Football week four, right, or week five would be all the rage? Possibly
Super Bowl
all the rage.
Preview? I mean, can we say, seriously, if it's 3-0, 3-0 against maybe 3-1, because Cleveland's got to go to Baltimore, but at least they have an extra day after that black and blue matchup to go take on the Niners.
You're absolutely right, and you got to realize the Niners are going to be coming off a bye. And you look at this situation, the Niners could start off 4-0, and it wouldn't shock you. It would be like
4-0 traveling to L.A. to take on the Rams.
Right. And it wouldn't.
It's a div sound effect.
It would shock me if they were 4-0. Shocked.
I understand. You'd be like, man, this is pretty incredible. But you don't. I wouldn't say. This is not like they got the Patriots and they got the Seattle up there earlier. And they're playing Baltimore up there earlier. It's, you know, it's not like I think the Titans are better than every team that they're playing those first three games.
Do you think the Titans are the best of those?
I think better than the Jets. No, just the first three games
for the Browns.
For the Niners.
For the Niners.
The first three games: Tampa Bay, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh.
Got it.
I think the Tennessee Titans are better than those three teams. So I'm just saying, if you had thrown
more and more people keep telling me about Tennessee, and I'm shaking. I think they're the worst in the division, but I'm shaking because they've got a good defense.
We talked about that yesterday. Yeah. One of the five teams to average less than 20 a game was the Tennessee Titans, and you know, we forget about that as we look at the limitations of Marcus Mariota. You forget about the good running game, Derrick Henry, and the fact that the defense is so stout.
We're living in a world where the AFC South is going to be nasty. You realize that, right? Is everyone ready for that? You ready to live in that
nasty
world?
Nasty.
Where it's like, hey, you see what's going on in the AFC South this weekend?
Yeah.
I used to not watch the AFC South until whenever one of them hosted the wild card game,
right. First
wild card game that first Saturday. That's the AFC South special right there. Very rarely would Houston or Tennessee or Indy get any game other than that.
We were at the Atlantis Casino and Resort in Reno when there was that very game, Houston against the Raiders and Connor Cook, game.
That game may have gotten better attention had Carr not gotten hurt.
Then
you would have had,
without a doubt,
that all the luster was lost on that because of the injury.
It was so lost. But I don't think we're being home. Joe, and you said, have you not put enough stock in them? I don't think you have. And I understand what we've seen, Jimmy G getting injured, you know, and all of a sudden they had they're going to their second and third string quarterback, but they still competed last year. There are some games that you're talking about, one game, one score differential. Now you got better pass rushers. You got to admit that they got way better pass. You just got a guy who came off a 13 sack year last year, Dibs. And guess what? Now you had a guy inside. Buckner already had double-digit sacks. But now you got a pass rusher. So he's going to at times get singled. So now he's going to be better. And now you're talking about Nicky Bosa was an upgrade. So you're going to look at this pass rush. And even if it don't get sacks, Daniel, if I can get pressure and get hands up, 1, 2, 3, the ground belongs to me. And then guys that on the front line, they're getting the hands up, getting guys down by the quarterback. A lot of pressure. You don't got a sack. Pressure is just as good. So if you look at it that way and say, man, and you got linebackers, you know, the Mike linebacker from Tampa Bay, this guy's
coming off an ACL.
Coming off ACL, but he's back. He's been off for a year. This guy's back. He's running sideline to sideline. They said he's had good workout. So you're talking about a guy that's a tackling machine.
You can hold. DeForest Buckner can keep guys off of him. You got Solomon Thomas. Maybe he's a good run blocker. So now he can hold a double team. You got four down linemen. And you want your linebacker to be able to run. This guy's a thumper. Now you got a guy that can go sideline to sideline and able to hold that in. You've gotten better on the front.
Yes.
They're going to beat Tampa Bay. They're winning that game. They're going to be 1-0. You can't lose that game.
You're neglecting to go all the way back to the back end of your defense, which is, if you look at it, they didn't really make any upgrades, and you brought Jimmy Ward back, and that's your big move. Kwaski Tart, unproven. Adrian Colbert, Akilla Witherspoon. These guys are just players. None of these guys is really that good.
Well, let me ask you this. How bad is the unit considering they've never had a good pass rush to bail them out? Right? Like, a great pass rush will make a secondary look better than it is. But a terrible pass rush is going to hang you out there to where you might have to be in coverage 4 or 5 seconds. So maybe they're not great, but are they that big of a question mark? Because we keep, and I'm guilty of this as well, I keep circling that as, the problem's going to be the secondary. If you have a great pass rush this year or an above average pass rush, they should be better. They should, by and large, be able to take a step
absolutely.
Ahead just
because
of that.
They should be better, but how much better?
That's the question.
Because I look at this secondary, and you think about, do you have any real game-changer playmakers? And you don't. Richard Sherman's a lockdown guy, but he's not going to get you 10 interceptions. That's just not the player he is.
Deion's not walking through that door.
No. Do you have a guy who can step in and thump and jar the ball loose? Well, you haven't really done that with this group, so I'm going to cautiously say no. Is it bend but don't break? Maybe, but this is a team that defensively has given up points in bunches. And you mentioned the pass rush. They were pretty much mediocre last year. If you look at the sack totals, they were, what, you said 22nd, tied for 22nd. They were only a handful of sacks, though, away from being in the top 10. So they were right in that middle group. I don't see them, even if they get the 46 sacks that Lowe's predicting, and I don't think you're wrong, by the way.
I love that prediction, by the
way. Your numbers
are
spot on.
The fact that you have such an exact number.
If you have those numbers again, I'd love to hear them so I could make sure I write them down, because I think you absolutely nailed it. But I don't think that necessarily portends to where you're going to all of a sudden have 20 interceptions as a secondary.
But if you're getting third and long, Dan, I totally agree with you. You're not going to – you're right. If you're third and three or four, whatever, yeah, you're not going to get a lot of picks. I get that. But if this team – if that defensive front and these linebackers can get the win on first and second down, and now you're third and five or six or something like that – I think the rate of interception is going to increase. So now the quarterback can't get to three steps and let the ball go in the timing routes. So now he's going to have to hold. And now you got five offensive line trying to block four defensive linemen, and you only can double team one. So you're going to have some guys got to beat the one-on-one block. So now you can say, how can I cheat the coverage? It's football's about alignment and assignment. And now I say, okay, now you got Richard Sherman, other corner, safety. And I know, Tawart, you look at some of these guys in the secondary, you say, God, is Colbert going to make him? Jimmy Ward, what are these guys going to do? Look at the safeties, and you say, oh, my God, how's Jimmy Ward? How's, you know,
a healthy Tart? Jimmy Ward is a win. Like, if he's just healthy, that's a huge win.
It is. And you can cheat coverages a lot of times, Daniel, on these things. You can say, okay, let's funnel him into the middle. This is by alignment and assignment. I'm taking away these routes. A big time with the San Francisco 49ers, so much of it was based on technique last year, where guys are lined up and they know the guy's inside stem. So he's like, okay, I'm still letting him beat me to the inside when I know I need to take that away.
Were you saying they're poor fundamentals last year?
Poor fundamentals. And when you've got poor fundamentals, that carries over. A guy now, he's bailing on his technique. Bam, he's opening up his inside leg and dropping back and letting the guy beat him. And that's where he can't, because the safety's tending on him going outside. So there's little nuances that these guys can do. And you're absolutely right. These corners aren't great. And Richard Sherman's not great anymore. He's good. He's above average, but I don't know if he's still great.
Well, his leadership's going to be important come December if they're anywhere near this thing. Because
there's
no one else really on this roster that has any idea what a playoff push is like.
Gravitas, he's got it. He's got the experience, like you say, Super Bowl champ. And I look at those first 3 weeks, and I see Mike Evans, I see A.J. Green, and I see Juju Smith-Schuster, and I see 3 games where each of those guys goes over 100 yards and probably finds the end zone.
Yeah, but you also see Jameis Winston and Andy Dalton. You can feel pretty good about that.
Let's put that aside for a minute, Coach. I'm rolling.
Forget about the quarterback, Joe. It's all about the star wide receiver.
It's all about the catch, not the throw.
Let's talk about the red-handed pistol. Let me tell you something that should give you hope for week 1, right? Now, we talked about this a couple months ago. point spreads coming out on week one NFL games. People, degenerate. Don't think like that. Look at it as the stock market, right? The average fan, the guy who bets casually, who doesn't really know what he's doing, right? He's not making wagers on this stuff now. The only guys who are betting these numbers are guys who feel like they have an edge. The Niners at Tampa originally opened. The Niners were in a 2.5-point underdog. And I remember we came in and we felt pretty good about that because it was like, damn, Tampa's not even getting the full 3 for home field, which clearly means that the bookmakers think the Niners are the better team, which is why there's the half-point shade. If Tampa was a 3-point favorite, they'd be getting the 3 points for home field, and then Vegas is telling you they're an even matchup. But they're not. They're going 2.5. And 3 is the most key number in sports betting when it comes to the NFL. I can explain that another day. So you got Niners minus 2.5. Now, 2 months later, do you know where we're at?
What?
Well, it's a variety of numbers depending on the sports book. But there are sports books out there that are considered square books, books that, you know, a lot of public guys that don't really know what they're doing bet at. Then there are sharp books. And the sharp books are where you want to see the number because that will give you an indicator. I'm looking at 2 sharp books right now. Mm-hmm. Pick 'em.
Wow.
Down to a pick 'em. Enough Niner money, enough respected Niner money has come in over the last couple months since this game opened up that I am looking at a straight pick 'em at not one but 2 sharp books that are out there. Right? So the early sentiment, that's not locking anything up or guaranteeing anything, but the early sentiment of money that's out there is that this was a miss, is that the books open a bad number and these guys are taking advantage of it and they're betting San Francisco early to get those points and they've knocked it all the way down to a pick 'em. That's a good sign about week one. That's a good sign. I think the one thing that keeps popping up that people are worried about is the fact that Bruce Arians is coaching Tampa Bay. Bruce, obviously a very good coach, but it's still great Winston. Coach. It's still an organization that has been through quite a bit. I mean, how many coaches have they had? I think it's like 5 coaches in the last 9 years. They had Lovey there for 1 year, and then they fired him, and then they promoted Dirk Cutter because they were worried they were going to lose him.
Old
and
Dirk.
Cutter couldn't get it going. I mean, you're not going up against one of the buttoned-up organizations in the NFL. And if you're going to play in Tampa, I don't have a problem with it being week one. If you're going to open or you're going to have road back-to-backs in there, open the season with it. Mm-hmm. You have plenty of time to get the bodies ready, plenty of time to travel. You don't have to worry about a game the week before. This would be the time to knock a couple of these out because then how's it play? Mm-hmm. What, of the next 16 games, you got 10 at home?
Right.
And I mean, we could just do that all
day. And then you got to realize, too, I think the Niners have a lot of depth on that off defensive line. So you can have fresh bodies, and that game would probably be won in the fourth quarter. You look at the humidity, what's going to be going on in Tampa. You got to look at that and say, God, can they get Jameis off his spot? Jameis has been off his spot. You've seen it. The guy can absolutely light it up, but at times you can get pressure on him. And if you can pressure Jameis Winston, he's going to serve you up the ball.
Without question. He's gonna give going you back some, to Florida State, he's the king of the first half turnover. He loves digging holes. He loves it.
He does. So I don't know, Dibs. I know you're looking at it and they haven't won on the road and the 8 games, you know, haven't run on the road. I just think that you can't look at it like that and just say, it's going to lose.
For me, you look with a discerning eye at the personnel. Understood. And I look at a wide receiver core and I think about, you know, let's take George Kittle aside because we know he's a great tight end. And I think Peter King had some praise for him that was saying that maybe he was the greatest tight end of the game and could be one of the greats of all time. Wide receiver-wise, to me, you've got a group of inexperienced guys. Marquise Goodwin unable to stay on the field and be healthy. Deebo Samuel not signed. Jalen Hurd, a bit of a project. He's got great potential at 6'5", but we don't yet know what he's going to be. A
lot of length, as they say.
Then you get into your Dante Pettises and your Richie Jameses, and I just don't see a number one wide receiver on this team. So if I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm looking at stopping the Niners, I'm going to go ahead and bring 7, maybe even 8 in the box and make Jimmy G beat me via the wide receivers.
Do you need a good number one wide receiver? I'm trying to think right now. Like the Rams, do they have a good number one or do they just have a collection of guys who can catch passes?
Good guys who can catch passes because Robert Woods was an elite high school player. He was a great college player. He's a good pro.
Bobby Dubs.
Yeah, you wouldn't say that he's necessarily a number one, but he's... he's better than any wide receiver on the 49ers.
Does Kansas City have great wide receivers? Or you got a guy that can run, a guy that can fly? Is he a great wide receiver, or is his speed
just... You talking about Tyreek Hill?
Yeah. Is his speed just unbelievable?
Who are the other wide receivers on that team, now that I think about it? I'm completely spaced out.
But would Tyreek Hill be the best receiver on the Niners?
Yes.
He would be.
And he's the best receiver on friggin' Kansas City as well.
So we mentioned... we mentioned two receivers from the Rams. Both of those receivers would be the best receiver on this 49er team. And we could play this game team by team. Larry Fitzgerald would be the best receiver on this team.
No, he wouldn't. He'd be a better possession receiver. I'm just being real. What do you think?
I think it's interesting because he's old.
Thank you. He's not the
best. But he's also still Larry Fitzgerald.
What, do you have 80 catches last year? 10 tugs?
Coach. That guy's going to be in the retirement home catching 45 for 540.
Goodwin can beat Tyree. We found that out, and they had the fastest guy in the league. Now you got a guy. Here's the thing, though. Daniel, if he's healthy.
Lorenzo.
If he can run down the field, what do you do with your cornerback?
That's a gigantic if. He got hurt on a play that he wasn't even involved. He was going in motion, Coach.
Okay, I'm asking you.
And I'm telling you.
Goodwin got hurt going in motion?
He got hit in the quad. He missed a couple of games.
Right, I forgot about that.
He got bumped on a block. And I know Marquise runs probably a 4-1 if we wanted to clock him. But if you can't be on the field, and you said if, to me that's a gigantic 20-foot high neon if.
Do you think he's on the field?
It's like Willie Mays Hayes. Well, you may run like Mays, but you hit like.
Right.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, okay. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 8 o'clock hour of Jolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. 1 hour from now, we will visit with Chris Rose, the host of BattleBots, as well as, you know, intentional talk on the MLB Network and game day highlights on the NFL Network. Cam Inman, 49er beat writer from the Bay Area News Group, set to join us at 9:30. But we begin the 8 o'clock hour right here.
Base hit right field, but hit too hard, probably. They're going to wave in Buster Posey. The throw is going to go to third, and Sandoval's going to make it. Dickerson comes through again.
Does it again. Whew. When you're hot, you're hot.
Giants 8, Rockies 4. The Orange and Black have now won 11 of their last 13, during which time they have outscored the opposition 104-50. The Giants have a plus 54 run differential over their last 13 games, at which time they've been averaging 8 runs per game. 8 runs per game, and they are officially out of solo last place in the NL West for the first time since May 19th. Dibs, shout you out for looking that one up this morning. Thank you very much. Here's one interesting nugget from last night. 4-1 lead, Will Smith blows the save in the ninth. 4-4 game going to the 10th. Giants rally. They hang not one, not two, not three, but 4 runs in the 10th. They come out after blowing a 4-run lead and immediately hang 4 runs in a single inning. Last year, these guys averaged 3.7 runs per game. That was 29th in Major League Baseball, ahead of only the Miami Marlins. 3.7 runs per game. They go out there last night in the 10th and score 4 just to put the Rockies away. And they'll turn to Sean Anderson today to look for the 4-game sweep. I don't know what I'm supposed to make of this. I'm having a lot of fun watching it. It's as exciting as baseball as I've seen since the World Series back in 2014. I don't think they've had a better run since. The first half of, what was it, 16?
Right.
Wasn't bad. I mean, they were one of the best teams in baseball. But this is an exciting brand. You got Pilar in center field going full Superman virtually anytime something's hit out there. And that is a big outfield at Coors. I just don't know where this goes. I'm trying to figure out one thing, the how. And by the way, shout out NBC Sports Bay Area for the audio. The how. How are they doing this? This wasn't supposed to be possible this
They're
year.
Doing it with offense, and it's coming from everywhere. It's not coming from just one source. You look at Alex Dickerson in a small sample size, as we borrow from Damon Bruce, small sample size, and you realize that the guy's hitting 400. So that's not a huge sample size because he's only had, I think, about 100 plate appearances, but he's hitting 400. You see Buster Posey finding his stroke. Brandon Crawford right now is on his way to a Silver Slugger season if he keeps this up. He is absolutely ripping the cover off it. And then you get the secondary pieces, Donovan Solanos and the Steven Vogts. Everyone's contributing. You look at the runs per game you mentioned, they're averaging 4.4 runs per game for the season. Not only this last, whatever it is, 10 or 11
almost
games.
Almost a full run better than last year. That is an insane jump.
Insane. And they're on pace to score 113 more runs than they did last year, which would be more than half a run per game.
Look out, Yankees.
Home runs are up. OPS is up. And so you look at the pitching staff, which has been solid. The bullpen, with last night aside, has been good. But it's been the offense that has propelled this team, not only in this run, but all year long.
What's the how? He's saying offense, but it's got to be more than that, isn't it? I mean, what's the how here? How are they doing this?
You know what? They're manufacturing runs. And I think that Farhan's did a great job of the guys that he brought in. You look at Dickerson, what he's been able to do. Here's a guy you bring in, and it just kind of, excuse me, it made these older guys just step up and even play better. I mean, this is a team last night that you saw look like, looked like this was going to turn to the, not in the direction that the Giants would like to see it. They could have easily said, you know what? Hell, we've been on a nice heater. Hey, this we'll let this one get away. No, they scratched, they fought, ended up manufacturing another four runs. When you think about what they're able to do, the way they're able to do what they're doing with the consistency in which they are, I'm telling you right now, Farhan's in a very, very tough situation because if you're looking at this team and the hot as they are, who are you afraid of? Who are you afraid of right now when you watch where they're at in the standings and you see that they're just a game or two back from being a wild card team? So I think this team's playing great.
I think it's culture more than anything else. Culture and mindset right now. So much of that matters in baseball above the other sports. Not to say it doesn't matter in the other sports because it does, but baseball is just this long, tedious grind. It seems as if you are just always engulfed by baseball when you are playing baseball. Game ends, but you're showering up, you're talking to the media, you're getting on the bus, you're going back to the team hotel, you're still with the guys. Maybe you go out with the guys, you wake up the next morning, team breakfast, things of that nature. You've got batting practice and everything else. Constantly around the guys, constantly traveling around the country together, going through things other people couldn't seem to understand. We've seen this in baseball before. Major League, obviously a fictitious movie, but you see that sort of story play out before. The team might not have as much talent, but there's just that culture. There's just that mindset where guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.